clear something up. Greg was never there.
Never there. He went to like UC.
He went to Northridge.
Yeah, he went to Northridge.
Greg was there recently. Greg Tommy's in Westwood recently. That's not as close as he
By the way, I have targeted Northridge as the school that's going to give me an honorary degree. Northridge.
We've done nothing but mock that school.
Go Matadors! All right, one side of the coin, John, I actually do get an honorary degree from Northridge. Other side of the coin, they hang up the phone, called in the air.
They'd be lucky to have you. Heads.
Yeah, heads it is.
Heads it is.
All right, Mace, I will defer. No advantage goes with that.
All right, Baylor Bears women's basketball head coach Kim Mulkey had something to say after her team was eliminated by number one seed UConn last night. And by the way, it was a terrible call. That girl got absolutely mugged. That was clearly a foul and didn't get the call. Mulkey advocated that the NCAA stop testing for the Final Four and let the focus be strictly on basketball. She says, quote, after the games today and tomorrow, there's four teams left, I think, on the men's side and on the women's side. They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that test positive or something and they don't get to play in the Final Four? So you just need to forget the COVID test and get the four teams playing in each Final Four and go to battle with it. What do you think of Mulkey's idea?
What's unusual is she's had COVID. You know, she was sidelined with COVID. So my guess is she didn't have a very strong case of it. She probably thinks it's no big deal, that it's like the flu. But I think one of the reasons why that they've had a successful tournament, one of the reasons why we've had an NBA season this year is because of all the testing.
Yeah.
I think we should do exactly the opposite of what Kim Mulkey says. I think we should continue the testing. They've tested, I think I read somewhere over 100,000 times in the tournament and during the season, and they've been able to control it. They've lost one game, Mace. Early in the year, early in the tournament, VCU had a COVID outbreak, and so they gave Oregon a forfeit in round one. But that's it.
Yeah, that's the only incident.
What she's forgetting is these are college students. Let's say we follow the Kim Mulkey plan, and one of the four Final Four teams has a COVID outbreak. Then they play, so they give it to the other team that they're playing against, and then all those kids go back to their schools. It's a terrible idea to stop testing during the tournament. I think she's probably frustrated because they blew that call.
They blew that call, and she was really upset last night.
Her team got screwed. She's an unbelievable coach. She's a really famous women's player herself. I think if she had a chance to rethink this, she would probably say it differently.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to change what they're doing because it has worked so well. And I don't know why all of a sudden now you would stop ignoring a deadly disease because it's the Final Four.
Especially when testing has gotten so much better and you've found a way to control it. Just
roll with it.
Yeah.
It's working.
Dance with the one that brought you.
Yeah. All right, it's to you.
All right, Mace. When the Washington Post wrote a series of articles detailing all of the shady and inappropriate things that the Washington football team has done over the past 15 years, you, Steve Mason, were convinced that owner Daniel Snyder could not survive it. And to be fair, the team is still under a formal investigation that hasn't been completed yet.
Correct.
But last week, it was announced that Daniel Snyder will gain almost complete control of the franchise after the NFL's finance committee cleared the way for him to buy out all of his minority investors. My argument has always been that Snyder will be protected by the other billionaire owners and he won't be canceled. You've always argued that in this day and time, he can't survive. Does this news, the news that the other owners in the finance committee let him buy out all the other guys, change your mind? Do you think Snyder survives now?
Why do I think he's collecting that to sell the team?
No, he'll never sell.
So he's got the entire team, and Jeff Bezos then buys it. Didn't I read that somewhere that he's buying all
he
the minority players out?
Yep, and Bezos supposedly wants to buy a sports team someday.
Yeah, so that's their connecting dots because Bezos is in D.C. and he owns USA Today, and it would be, does he own Washington Post or USA
Washington
Today?
Washington Post. Okay. Washington Post is what he owns.
He might own both.
These are creepy dudes. Daniel Snyder's a creepy dude. If everything that is in those reports is real, it's shameful that he's allowed to keep his franchise. And I'm not saying, look, you do creepy stuff. You can say canceled. I can say you did inappropriate stuff and there are repercussions. I mean, there's stuff in there. You may be right. Maybe the owner mafia is going to keep Daniel Snyder on board, but there's a real lack of ethics there.
Right. Well, I mean, they forced out Jerry Richardson because they wanted him out. They don't want Dan Snyder out because Dan Snyder has stupid money. You know, and I think Dan Snyder's going to survive it. But time will tell. Maybe Jeff Bezos does swoop in and buy the team. The other thing is he's not going to name the team this year. He's sticking with Washington Football Team. And I think the reason
I think they should keep it, period.
Well, I think one of the reasons he's keeping it is he doesn't want whatever name they come up with, even if the name's great, it puts him back in the news again. It puts all the Daniel Snyder stories back on the front burner. I think he likes him being on the back burner. So I think Daniel Snyder's there to stay. I don't think anybody's throwing him out. And I think that the Washington Football Team is stuck with Snyder as an owner for as long as he wants.
Yeah, by the way, Washington Post opinion page, NFL making the wrong move with Dan Snyder.
Yeah, that's his own paper.
Bezos' paper, okay, yeah. They talk about the sexual harassment allegations and that the investigation is not over yet. So I don't think the story is necessarily over yet. If it gets really ugly, he could be forced out. But at the moment, it seems as though, and the Washington Post is making the case, wrong move to keep Daniel Snyder. All right, it's to me. Now that Drew Brees is retired, he begins his contract with NBC. He'll start out by working Notre Dame football. Then comes the secret succession plan. As long as Brees doesn't screw it up, he will join Mike Tirico in the NFL Sunday night broadcast booth in the next couple of years. Does this make sense? Is this succession plan real? And what do you think of it?
I think the succession plan is possible, but here's what I think is happening. The reason they won't come out and announce that is that Drew Brees has never done a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Ever. We don't know if
he's
any
good.
Right. He could be a stiff. So I think they're going to try him out, see if they think he is what Tony Romo is.
Yeah, he's going to be the Notre Dame guy for this year.
And then all of a sudden you have an option to replace Collinsworth. But Collinsworth and Al Michaels are the best to do it. I mean, if they handed those guys a 5-year contract and just kept Tirico and Brees on the B team, I think all four of those guys would actually be okay with that.
Although, you know, it's interesting. Collinsworth is obviously younger. Al is 74 and isn't making some of the trips for Monday Night Football. He was careful this last year. So, you know, it may be that it comes a time where Al starts to decide to slow things down a little bit. We'll see. But Andrew Marchand says that's the secret succession plan, that ultimately it will be Mike Tirico and Drew Brees on Sunday Night Football. I would miss Collinsworth. Collinsworth is my favorite analyst. I hate Romo, but I love Chris Collinsworth. I think he brings so much to a game. But, yeah, that sounds like the secret succession plan. I think it's a good broadcast team. I think it's good. I'd hate to see Chris forced out, but it sounds like that's the direction they're going. It's to you.
All right, Mace, I think we would all agree that the job of lifeguard is pretty important in Southern California, especially since so many people go to the beach. But what is a fair salary to pay a lifeguard? Let's say you, we'll let all you guys jump in on this. You guys are in charge of determining what these guys should be paid. What should the best lifeguards on the beach be paid a year? So if we use, I'll give you an example. Like
the best lifeguard.
Yeah.
What city?
In Los Angeles, in Southern California. So what grade is the most important school teacher? Would you say like third, fourth, fifth grade in there?
I don't think you can lump in anything with school teachers because everyone knows that they're completely unfairly underpaid.
All right. So give what could you lump in a lifeguard with? Like maybe a nurse? Nurses are really important.
An EMT.
Important role. Or an EMT. I think EMTs, what do they make, Mace? Roughly average salary of an EMT is probably got to be, I would think, close to six figures, right?
EMTs, no, they do not.
Okay, well, what would you guys...
EMTs make generally $35,500 a year.
They are underpaid.
All right,
so what, Mace, take a guess, and I have these figures. What do the best lifeguards on the beach get paid a year?
Well, I'm going to say $100 a day, which is 100 times...
It's 500, that's 2,000 a month. That's about 25 grand, 25, 30 grand a year.
That's 261 grand if it's $100 a day.
Well, no. Are they working 7 days a week?
No, 5 days a week.
So they get $500 a week, 4 weeks in a month. That's $2,000 a month. That's
$24,000.
Where are you getting $260?
$24,000. Okay, I think $24,000 is about right.
That's insane.
All right, Lindsay, what do you think of the best lifeguards on the beach get paid?
Well, if I'm going to base my guesstimate off of the show Baywatch,
yeah,
which is a great TV show, they all
excellent
had some
show.
pretty nice cars, pretty nice houses, and that was in Los Angeles, Southern California, right? Hey,
yeah, take
sure.
a guess.
So I'll say like 200,000.
Okay, Jorge, what do you think?
115,000.
Okay. According to an investigation by Forbes, the highest paid Los Angeles lifeguards earn up to $392,000 annually.
Good for them.
Dozens of others rake in more than 200 grand a year. Seven LA County lifeguards earn more than 300 grand by tapping into overtime pay in 2019, which is the last year that Forbes found. Meanwhile, 82 of the lifeguards, Lindsay, made more than $200,000 in 2019. Do you guys think paying the lifeguards that much is smart or stupid?
It's
taxpayer money.
It's obviously a really important job. It seems high.
I don't think it seems high. You know how many people you have to watch? Imagine. Remember those photos from, especially like when the pandemic started and everyone was flocking to the beach because you could go outside? There's thousands and thousands of people on these tiny little, these areas of the beach that are like your section. And there's only like, what, two lifeguards per tower? And I don't know how far the towers go, but imagine you have thousands of people, lives in your hands, essentially, if they go swimming or something bad happens. So I don't think it's too much.
All right. Well, just know that these are tax dollars. These are state officials. So we're paying for these guys, and that's what they're paying them. They're paying them $300,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it, and I look at it in the scale of the jobs we were talking about. Nurses make on average $53,000 a year.
No, EMTs, they don't. They make way more than that.
All he did was Google
$25.72 per hour, according to the national average.
Oh, US, well, that's national average.
Yeah, U.S. national average salary is $53,490.
Specifically in L.A., my old roommate, she easily cleared six figures, like easily without
overtime.
But
I'm just talking about a scale. EMTs make $35,500 nationally. Nurses make $53,450 nationally. I think in the great scheme of things, that seems too high. I don't begrudge anybody that makes money. Good for you guys. Make as much as you possibly can and you know, do a great job and all that stuff. I just think we've got a real sort of whacked up job between what teachers make and EMTs and nurses make, and they all are dramatically underpaid. I'm glad lifeguards are getting there. Is there a union for lifeguards?
I wouldn't doubt it with those numbers.
With those numbers, it sounds like there might be a union, exactly.
All right, it's to you.
Actually, it's not to me because we're going to end it there. The Fast Track is brought to you by our friends at Puente Hills Toyota. Find out why Puente Hills Toyota is the house of yes. Coming up next for you, Bill Plaschke is with us. Talk about wearing Dodger blue glasses. Bill Plaschke with what I think is an outrageous prediction in today's LA Times. That is coming up next for you. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, it is a big week because we've got NCAA tournament tonight, both USC and UCLA playing in the Elite Eight. Tomorrow, Giannis versus Andre Drummond, who's now going to play, and the Los Angeles Lakers. And Thursday is Dodgers opening day. And joining us right now is Bill Plaschke, who's got the most optimistic view I've ever seen of any team in the history of the world. Bill, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm just being a realist, fellas.
But and, Bill, this is very unlike you. You normally are a realist.
I know. Well, did you read the entire column?
Yes, read all the words. By the way, Bill is predicting that the Dodgers will win 116 games.
What was the last line in the column? Do you remember?
You wrote the column for Tommy Lasorda.
Yes. So it was. So think about it. That's how Tommy would have read it. That's how Tommy would have viewed it. That was in his honor.
Oh, well, I didn't get that. That's a little too subtle for you, Bill.
little too subtle. But anyway, I believe it. If there's ever time to write it, it would be in memory of Tommy. But I also in memory of what kind of season they're going to have. Look at this team. I mean, look at this. They have a Cy Young Award winner as a long reliever.
Yeah.
They have a 2019 MVP as arguably the fourth best player on the team. They have great starters in the bullpen.
Bill,
they're loaded.
Bill, you were here in 2004 when the Lakers signed Gary Payton and Karl Malone and started the season 21-2, right? There's too many things that can happen.
That was Kobe versus Shaq happened that year.
Right,
there's no Kobe and Shaq on this team.
Well, here's the thing.
Kobe versus Shaq.
Okay, Bill, what about the year they got Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and paired them with Kobe, Pau Gasol, and Ron Artest? How'd that work out?
There's nobody as old as Steve Nash, as brittle as Steve Nash. Steve Nash has never even played that game. I've got an answer for everything.
Apparently, yeah.
Okay, so I want to deal with this on the merits, Bill, because first of all, I agree with you that this is a team that is going to win a whole bunch of games. It's going to win the National League West, and they should and are the World Series favorites. So I'm going to concede that all to you. I'm a huge fan of this team, huge fan of Andrew Friedman, love what they've done during the offseason, added a reigning Cy Young Award winner as the number three starter. But 116 games is way too many games. I think they'll break 100, but 116 games is way too many games. You're being way overly optimistic, and I think you're underestimating how good the Padres are potentially going to be.
I am so sick of this Padres stuff. Like I said in the column, beat the Dodgers in a big game and then pop off. Let's just wait and see. Tatis is already hurt. He's already sore. The starting pitching is just coming off some injuries. Hugh Darvish. So you're betting on Hugh Darvish? Come on.
Hugh Darvish, Bill. Look at what he did last year. Hugh Darvish is coming off a really good year with Chicago. We remember him for one bad game.
Nobody was – one bad game, two bad games, and it cost him the World Series. I'll never forget that. He doesn't pitch well under pressure. He'll be under the pressure this year. I'm saying the Padres are going to be a decent team, okay? The rest of the National League West is going to be terrible. Most of the National League Central is terrible. The National League East, okay, the Mets might be decent.
Braves are going to be very good.
The Braves could be decent. Yeah, but, I mean, there's not a lot of competition out there. And the Dodgers have such depth, and they have so many stars on this team, and they have a clubhouse that works well. They have a Hall of Famer who's probably the fourth best starting pitcher. Goodness, I mean, no team has ever been staffed like this in this town before. Never.
Bill, have you heard the phrase, hubris comes before the fall? You are guilty of hubris, my friend. This column is, I mean, every team in the league is going to print your column and put it up on their bulletin board
Bill.
I hate that every team in the league is going to print up and read my column. I hate that my column is getting read. Oh, my gosh. What a shame that is for me.
Can you imagine?
I'm not working for the Dodgers. I work for the fans.
Boy, I'll tell you what. You write like you work for the Dodgers.
Oh, one column in 40 years? Yeah, right.
All right, now, Bill, no. I'm a little guilty.
No,
of
the Dodgers. In fact, the Dodgers don't want this. The Dodgers – they probably hated this column. They probably hated it. This is not like the Dodgers would never approve this column.
Okay, so, Bill, I want you to tell me if I'm guilty of being a ridiculous homer or if you agree with me. I think USC can give Gonzaga a game tonight, and I think they might even beat him. I think that they have the height.
I wrote this.
Go ahead.
I think you're right, John, and I have written this in the paper twice already in the last 3 weeks. They can absolutely be Gonzaga. USC could win a national championship, and it would not be a surprise to me.
Wow.
I agree with you. When I saw what they did to Kansas, and not just that they won the game, but how they destroyed them. I mean, there was nothing in that game that indicated that Kansas could play with USC on any level. Offensive, defensive, rebounding, fast break, you name it, USC was better. And Gonzaga is great at everything. They deserve all the accolades that they're getting. I think they've won 24 straight games by double digits. But if you were going to build a team that could give the Zags trouble, you would build USC. You would build, you'd put an NBA player on there like Evan Mobley. You'd make them long like USC is. You'd pick a coach that is bordering on cocky, but also kind of a realist in Enfield. And I just think Gonzaga could do what they've done to everybody else. I mean, I know I don't want to demean Gonzaga in any way, but this is exactly the type of team I would construct if I was trying to take them down, Bill.
Well, first off, you're not being a homer because you guys don't pay, nor does anybody in this town pay attention to USC basketball during the regular season.
That is correct.
So anybody who says they're going to win is being a realist. Nobody, let's face it, had, you know, 80% of the town doesn't know USC even has a basketball.
Well, I mean, frankly, 80% of the town doesn't watch any college basketball at all.
In fact, I tried to bring this up with you, Mason,
you did.
I believe, when you were with Momo before the tournament. I said, if Enfield doesn't get to the Sweet 16, he should be fired. And you said, who's Andy Enfield?
No, I did not say who's Andy Enfield. I know who Andy Enfield
yes,
is.
Did.
I'm yes, not going to call
did.
For the head of a guy who's I've never seen his team play.
Hey, Bill, since we only got a few minutes, I think UCLA's challenge tonight is tougher. And I'm a UCLA guy. I went to school there. I think they can win because they've found a way to stay in every game. But Michigan, to me, looks like a more complete team. What do you think of the second game, UCLA-Michigan?
Yeah, UCLA, I love him so much. And, I love Mick Cronin. We all love Mick Cronin.
He's
the best.
Been great. Yeah.
But I believe they're in over their skis finally. I believe they're going to probably run out of gas tonight. I hope not for their sake, but I agree. But no, USC, even before the tournament, they have the perfect tournament formula. One top NBA prospect and about five guys who are like 25 years old, transfers from 10 different schools. They're an old team. They're a veteran team. They're a savvy team. No, they can certainly win this. But I think UCLA is, I agree with you, and I think they're just, Michigan's just too big for them. USC, UCLA, again, they're playing without two of their best players.
Right, and Bill, I've said all week, and people think I'm crazy, I don't think UCLA has an NBA player in this game tonight. I mean, Hawkes and Juzang have a chance. Like, they'll be invited to camps. But you and I have both been around the NBA forever, Bill, and you know you have to have that top 1% talent to even make a roster, which is why there's such a great story this year. They play together. They fight. Cronin looks like he's ready to kill him, and then when they do something good, he looks like he's ready to, you know, hug every one of them. They're just, you can't take your eyes off this team because they just fight.
I think Juzang may have some NBA potential, but I think you're right. And also, they're the youngest team in the tournament. They have no seniors. They have nobody who's ever been there before. They're just, you know, Jaime Hawkins Jr. just takes the ball and brings it, takes it to the hoop without any cause. It gets caution into the wind. They are so fun to watch. They're much more fun to watch than USC because I think they're the ultimate overachievers.
Well, and they are overachievers.
No, because the whole time you're watching UCLA, Bill, if you're being honest, you're saying, how in the hell are they winning this game? Like, I think...
I thought they were going to lose at halftime of Michigan State. I'm covering that game. I called somebody and said, it's over with. They're down 14. They're done. That's like a week and a half ago. You're
when
right,
they
John.
Messed up every, the When they messed up the end of regulation against Alabama, they should have taken a foul. They just, Cronin admitted it after the game that he blew it. I thought, okay, that was their chance. And then they come out and score 23 points in the next 5 minutes. That's the fourth most points ever scored in a tournament overtime, ever. I mean, you never know what you're going to – so you can't take your eyes off. Bill, tonight is one of those rare nights in Los Angeles where nobody is going to get blamed for sitting in front of their couch or in front of their TV for 6 hours. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and it's been a win. You know what? And as much as I ride USC for saying they ought to win the tournament, even if they lose, it's been a great run. It's been a big, big boon for Trojan basketball.
Yeah, no doubt.
People are suddenly recognizing that there is a Trojan basketball. So,
last thing for you. What do you think of the Lakers and the acquisition of Andre Drummond?
I don't think it's as big as everybody says it's going to be.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You don't think this thing is still going to be down to if AD and LeBron can come back?
Well, of course it is. That's the entire season hinges on that.
Don't you think if the Lakers win a championship, this is LeBron's greatest triumph because this is his most difficult task to beat Brooklyn with this team? All the injuries he's had, the injuries AD's had. Don't you think Brooklyn is still the favorite?
Let me quote my friend Jeannie Buss, who says, "Bring it on,
bring it on." Wasn't that a great quote?
Love it,
and fantastic.
I love it. So
I'll
say this will certify LeBron as the greatest player ever. If the Lakers can win this season and beat the stacked Brooklyn Nets it'll certify LeBron as the greatest player ever, without question, without wow. question.
All right. Bill, with lots of hyperbole today, the Dodgers, USC is winning the national championship. The Dodgers are going to win 126 games, and LeBron will have his greatest accomplishment of his career and become the greatest player ever. The superlatives win, Bill.
If they win,
yes. All right. Hey, Bill, thanks, man. Always appreciate you coming on.
You guys are great. See you guys.
Plachke.
126 games.
I actually don't even want him to win. I don't want him to win 116 games. To me, that sets you up for failure. They also don't play the style of baseball that wins 120 or 116 games. Bill's talking about them breaking the record. They're not going to break the record. I think they are going to break 100. I mean, I think this Dodger team is really good. The one thing I'll say about them is we'll see this early. It's going to come down. One of the interesting dynamics is, how will Zach McKinstry play? Because he is in that Kike Hernandez role, which was so important for that team over the last 5-6 years. How is he going to be a super utility guy? That's one of the things I'm keeping an eye on. And the Dodgers have named a fifth starter officially. We got that coming up for you next. And what Jeannie Buss told Stephen A. Smith about the Brooklyn Nets. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.
You know, I forgot about that. He did take classes there and flamed out.
Disagree. I need transcripts. I don't think he could ever get in.
It's just a short transcript. Not a long transcript. But he did take some classes, apparently. That does not make you an alumnus. Actually, I wanted to bring this up. Today is National Virtual Vacation Day.
Oh, God, are you going to take the rest of the show off?
Vacation Day. And I'm virtually – I'm taking a virtual vacation during the show. So – but I'm curious. It's National Virtual Vacation Day. Describe if you could go somewhere today and enjoy vacation, where would you go? You got 1 week somewhere. Where do you go? Anywhere in the world.
And money is no object?
Money is no object.
Is COVID a factor?
Forget COVID. You're just going. COVID, it's the world is COVID-free. We're living in a post-COVID world. You can pick anywhere to go on vacation for 1 week, and money is no object.
Okay, so when was this? Like 2007, 2008. Lisa said, we're going to Italy. And we bounced around Italy for a long time. And in Italy, we stayed when we were up by Bellagio. We stayed in this place called Via d'Este.
Via d'Este.
It's unbelievable. It is the nicest place I've ever stayed. And Via since d'Este. We stayed there, they built a golf course and put it in there. And so I could go back to Italy, stay at Via d'Este, play the golf course, get on the boat to go to Bellagio whenever I want, and that's where I would go for a week. And you never have to leave, Mace, because they have 2 5-star restaurants on the property.
Wow, that's fancy, man.
That's right.
You are a fancy, fancy dude.
By the way, true story. When we're on the boat to go over to Bellagio, it's a 20-minute boat ride.
Yep.
The captain of the boat comes over the loudspeaker. He says, over to the left, where those green and white awnings are, is George Clooney's house.
Oh, wow.
Okay, because this is where
was there a mall sighting?
And then he waits for about 10 seconds, and he says, if you're a man, you want to move to the right side of the boat so we can balance the boat and make sure it doesn't tip over.
Oh, that's funny.
Because every woman on the boat ran to the left side of the boat to get a closer look at George Clooney's house.
Okay, virtual vacation. 1 week anywhere, money is no object. I am going to, and I've been a number of times, so it's a little bit of a cop-out when you go to the same place you've already been, I always think, because you've only got so much time in the world and so much time for international travel, so repeating is sometimes not good. But Juan has never been, and I've been like 4 times to the Greek islands. The Greek islands are just the best. So much partying, so much sun. Beautiful beaches, unbelievable sunsets, spectacular food. That's where I would go for a week, the Greek islands. Probably Mykonos and Santorini. Those would be my 2 choices. Lindsay, what about you?
We were talking about this yesterday off the air. I would totally go to the Maldives. That looks like the most amazing place in the world.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the Maldives.
I just know what it looks like there, and it looks awesome. The water is super clear, and all of those like little cabana hut thingies in the middle of the ocean. That's great.
Yeah, their slogan is, the Maldives slogan is, the sunny side of life. That's a winner.
Sounds good to me.
Jorge, what about you?
The Bahamas. I'll hit up Michael Thompson and see what's there to do there.
Yeah.
The Bahamas,
you know,
yeah.
That's an angle that we should all play.
Exactly.
What can Michael do for us? We give him all this airtime. What can Michael do for us?
Michael's been telling anyone he knows that he has the hookup in the Bahamas and he will wine us and dine us, and he's never done it for anyone.
never mind.
All right, so the Dodgers have made a decision, an official decision, on fifth starter. Remember, David Price was in the mix. Tony Gonsolin was in the mix. Ultimately, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts has settled on Dustin May.
Knew it.
Right now, Dustin's going to start that fifth game, and David is going to be a leverage reliever with length in the pen, and Tony Gonsolin is going to fit that same role, as well as Jimmy Nelson.
So you got three kind of long guys and May in the rotation. Here is why May is in the fifth spot.
You know, I think that, you know, it was easy. It was tough. Just a lot of variables that I really just don't really want to get into. I just think that we feel good with David, Jimmy, and Tony in the pen, getting left, getting right out, taking down 2, 3, 4 innings. Potentially at some point, I expect, you know, those guys to even finish a game if it makes sense. So a lot of good thoughts, but, you know, balancing a very talented pitching staff, this was sort of the first hurdle, and I think that we're in a good spot.
So the final set rotation, Kershaw will start opening day, then Buehler, Trevor Bauer, Julio Urías, and Dustin May. There's your five, and then Jimmy Nelson, Tony Gonsolin, and David Price. Long guys out of the bullpen, or he said even you could finish games with those guys.
Yeah, I think Dustin May earned that fifth starter spot. I'm glad there's, you know, he's gotten up to 102 miles an hour at certain pitches in spring training. You gotta test drive that thing and see if it works.
I agree. All arms and legs in his delivery. I mean, he is really fun to watch. So that'll be great. I love that rotation. I also think Julio Urías is primed for a really good year.
Well, we got a minute here. Can I ask you something about some big news that came out today?
Yeah.
Okay, so the NFL announced that they're adding a 17th game.
Yes.
All right, and this was very, very contentious because players said they can't make us play a 17th game. It's not safe.
Yes.
All right, and they pointed to studies and they said, no, you can't do it. And there was a very large contingent of people that thought this was a bad idea and unsafe for the players, right?
Yeah, players don't like it.
Okay. So, let's think about this for a second. When did they go to 16 games? Probably 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know the year the exact year, but a long time ago. They went from 14 to
16. Right. Any team that wins the Super Bowl, you followed the Rams on their Super Bowl run a few years ago.
Yep.
1978, by the way.
70. Oh, so it's been a long time.
So we've been doing this for 42 years. Okay.
Yep.
Every team that wins the Super Bowl plays at least 19 games.
Right.
So what? I don't get the.
But now they're going to play at least 20 games.
Right. But I'm just saying, most teams won't play 20 games. Two of them will. Right?
We're correct.
So was it just a negotiating ploy for them to say.
No. I don't think players wanted this. I think players are starting to realize the toll that the game takes on their bodies and on their brains.
They get half the money.
They do get half the money, but they also get all the pain. They also get all the hits.
But you see what I'm saying? If they're a playoff team, they're going to play more than that anyway.
But you're adding a game to everybody no matter what.
Yep.
I mean, the whole thing is you're adding a game to everybody. I think the NFL should not. Sorry, I was choking there.
Yeah, you're going to make it?
Yeah. Mm. All right, so the NFL should not preach anything about safety because they clearly don't give a damn about safety, player safety. And, you know, the truth is that players now, because the concussion issue is such a wide-open topic that everybody knows about it, they really are losing any sort of liability argument against NFL owners. Like, in other words, if you play NFL football today, if you are drafted to the NFL, you are under the knowledge that you may someday suffer traumatic brain injury
right.
that will permanently disable you.
Right. You pay for, you get paid a lot, but you pay for it with your health.
You go in with your eyes wide open. If the but the NFL pays lip service to health of players, but I don't think they really care. That's why they added this game. Now, as a fan, give me an extra game. Give me one less exhibition game,
yeah,
and give me one more real game.
It's a very strong argument on the players' behalf. Okay.
By the way, the Rams, here's the way that 17th game is going to come down. So everybody is going to play the team in the opposite conference that finished in the exact place in the standings that they did. So in other words, the winner of the AFC West will play the winner of the NFC West and so on. Third place team in the East plays third place team in the East. The Rams get a really tough draw. Their opposite in the AFC is the Baltimore Ravens. So they have got a 17th game at Baltimore. That
it's
will be their 17th
game. It's already been determined it's going to be at Baltimore?
They've decided it's going to be at Baltimore. So that is a really tough draw for a 17th game.
Okay. Oh, and then there's I'm changing subjects on you here a lot. But there's a tweet I got. Yesterday you and I argued a little bit about Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
You brought it up in Fast Track. You had the story that 19 women have filed civil suits against Deshaun Watson for being inappropriate during massages. My attitude about it was, hey, let's wait for all the facts. Your attitude was, we need to believe these 19 women.
You have to believe the women.
A listener tweeted me, and this actually is a good question that he wanted me to ask you. Does it change your opinion or make a difference to you that no criminal charges have been filed?
No.
So you just believe what these
look,
civil suits
do? Look, if 19 women come forward and tell the same story, I am not going to tell those 19 women that what they experienced didn't happen.
Even if there are no criminal charges?
Even if there are no criminal charges. It makes no difference. Makes none. By the way, big article in the Houston Chronicle I meant to bring up. Ignore anyone who thinks there's a Texans Deshaun Watson conspiracy. There's this kooky idea that because Cal McNair once lived on the same street as the attorney that is involved in
the attorney
all these...
has actually addressed this publicly.
Yeah. They said there's no reason why the Houston Texans would damage their own quarterback. There's no reason they would.
I actually agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, why would the Texans be involved in hurting Deshaun Watson?
It sounds like a crazy conspiracy theory to me, but I do think that he's entitled to some type of defense. I don't know what it'll
be. Of course he gets one. He'll get one in court. That's what they invented court for.
But it's all civil cases right now. I mean,
anybody can accuse
me and you of anything civilly.
A civil case in court counts.
Right.
I mean, a civil case is the same as a criminal case. I mean, it's not brought by federal authorities or state officials, but it is brought by an individual party, and there are 19 women who are telling the same story. I refuse to tell those women that their stories didn't happen.
I don't know if didn't happen would be the right way to phrase it, but I would ask the question, why are there zero criminal charges? And maybe they're coming, by the way. It doesn't mean, just because there's no criminal charges now, doesn't mean they won't be filed. That happens all the time. But I'm monitoring that part of the story. I think that anybody who has done what he's accused to have done is going to get a criminal charge or two.
By the way, there could be as many as 22 women.
Right.
Who are lodging complaints
against
Watson. It
sure be weird if the police come out and say, no, there's no case here, and 22 people go ahead and sue him anyway.
Yeah, it does.
Then you got to ask who the lawyer is.
You go to a courtroom, and a courtroom decides. That's exactly what a civil case is.
Right.
You bring a civil case. You say, look, you damaged me. Here's how you damaged me. Here is the case. Here are the facts. Jury, make a decision.
We should take Bergman to civil court for making us get rid of Fast Track.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe he could use his UCLA degree to defend himself.
His UCLA classes? His several classes at UCLA?
Yeah.
He audited classes?
I asked him, I said, prove it. Where's your transcript? He said, I was there too long ago. No transcript.
No transcript. All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder, Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Radio Tinder time. Lindsay, what do you got for us?
Starting off with a kind of Cleveland alert, Francisco Lindor, former Indian, and the Mets remain tens of millions of dollars apart in negotiations on a contract extension with less than 72 hours until Lindor's reported deadline. The Mets have made Lindor an offer of 10 years, $325 million, which would more than double the largest previous commitment in Mets history. Lindor's camp, on the other hand, is seeking a 12-year deal worth $385 million, which would be the largest contract extension in Major League history, topping the 12-year, $365 million deal that Mookie Betts got with the Dodgers last year. Do you think that Lindor should take the Mets' offer? Swipe left or swipe right?
I'll swipe right. I always think that when you leave these offers on the table, they come back to bite you. That's a ridiculous amount of money. If I was him, I would take it. How about you, Mace?
I would absolutely bet on myself and get to market. Francisco Lindor is a phenomenal player. I think the Mets are going to be really, really good this year. I think he's going to be one of the big reasons for it. And I think all these shortstops, whether it's Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, or Corey Seager, or Francisco Lindor, they're all going to go to market. And, you know, the going rate, you know, Mookie, 12 years, 365. Fernando Tatis, 14 years, 340.
Wow.
You know, that's where the market is for Major League Baseball players now. I think Francisco Lindor is right to hold out. The Mets should go back to him with more money and try to make him a comparable offer. But I have no problem with Francisco Lindor betting on himself having a great season this year.
I think that he should take the money, and I think you're wrong, Mason. Here's why. Going to a new team in a new league, first year after a pandemic when he had a pretty bad year last year and he wasn't good in the playoffs before that, I think he's totally overrated and I think he's nuts, because if he's betting on himself and he wants to go to free agency market, you know, again, switching leagues to the National League, there's no DA, the game is just played differently, and a team that's completely rebuilding or rebuilt itself, I think he's nuts.
I don't think the game is played that much differently. There's a DH in the American League, and otherwise and the National League doesn't have one. The game isn't that much difference between the National League and the American League. Pitching
changes. The ballparks are all different.
Yeah, I mean, but Francisco Lindor is unbelievably talented. If he goes to market, he's getting 12 years. I mean, if I tell you he goes to market, he gets 12 years, what's the right thing for him to do? To play it out, to sign for 10, or to hold out for 12?
I just think that he's being a little, especially with
you've
with
never
the
been high on Francisco Lindor. You've always thought that.
No,
he is
I used to
overrated.
Love him. He was my favorite player, but then the last 2 years, he completely ghosted the team in the playoffs. He didn't do anything in the playoffs. He's not a good postseason player. He didn't show up when they needed him, and I just think he's overrated. His head's gotten too big with this whole "my name's not Frankie, it's Francisco" thing. Like I think he's in for a bit of a challenge this year, going again, adjusting. He was with the Indians since he was drafted when he was like 17. I think
he's going to an unbelievably
situation.
Good lineup and is going to be very productive there, but we will see. It's to you.
All right. So Monday was a rough night for the Oregon State basketball team. Not only did the Beavers suffer a heartbreaking loss to Houston, but the NCAA was not giving the team much sympathy. The squad was booted from its hotel upon arrival from the arena and told to pack up as quickly as possible in order to make a flight at 1:15 a.m. This, of course, was due to COVID protocols. They didn't want the team unnecessarily staying in the hotel another night. The team arrived back on campus around 4 a.m. Was the NCAA wrong for doing this? Swipe left or swipe right?
Were they wrong? Lindsay, what would the alternative have been?
I mean, just let the guys get some sleep and
let the guys stay
in the hotel and fly back tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. I don't know why you'd make guys fly and get into campus at 4 o'clock in the morning after a loss. That's a really long, sad flight. Give the guys a night off, rest, relax, decompress. Although I'll tell you this, they will all have been in hotels for like 30 days or 20 days or whatever. They may have wanted out of that hotel badly. They may have badly wanted to go home. So, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a right answer or a wrong answer, but it doesn't seem completely outrageous, especially when kids probably want to get out of those hotels.
Well, one of the guys that covered the game or covers the team, Oregon State, made it sound as if they were completely not taken off guard, but, you know, they were just planning and going back to the hotel, getting their stuff together, and they were just kind of rushed out, like, get out, you're not staying another night, let's go, let's get out of here. And they're just like, whoa, okay, let's go, like, all right. I think that happened a lot in the bubble, though, didn't it, where when they would lose a game, they had to leave right away, leave campus immediately. Didn't that happen in the bubble a lot, John?
Well, yeah, but that was for COVID reasons. They didn't.
Yeah, that's what this is. Same thing.
That's what this is. This is for COVID reasons also.
Yeah, I think they're trying to navigate a pandemic. And by the way, I've found that many, many years of doing games the night before you come home from a road trip, I always wanted to leave after the game, regardless of the result. I think that okay. I just felt like the sooner we get home, the better.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of traveling, there was a scary moment for the Utah Jazz today. The
team plane was forced.
Yeah, they had to make an emergency landing shortly after taking off this morning after a bird strike. Donovan Mitchell and the rest of his squad mates were off to Memphis for their Wednesday game against the Grizzlies, and minutes into their flight, the plane suffered engine troubles. Delta officials confirmed the issue was due to contact with birds, saying in a statement, quote, as the aircraft was taking off, it hit a flock of birds. The left engine was shut down. The pilot declared an emergency return to Salt Lake International Airport. The aircraft landed without incident and was able to taxi back. I guess they sent the team home until they were able to get a new plane ready for them.
Right.
But everybody's okay. Nothing bad happened. It was just a little scare. Has anything like that, like, have you ever had a scary incident happen to you while you were flying?
One night we played a game. And Lakers were getting ready to go to Portland, and we get there, and the plane had a light they couldn't figure out. It had an indicator light, and they couldn't figure out how to get it to go out. And we stayed there on the tarmac until about 1:30 in the morning, and then they just walked back and goes, "We're not going. We're getting another plane. We're going tomorrow." So we had to fly day of game, flew into Portland, didn't even check into a hotel, went right to the arena, played the game, lost, and then flew home right after. So this is not totally uncommon. To have a plane malfunction. Did you guys see the pictures of the Utah Jazz plane?
No.
That bird really messed up that
engine. Well, it's probably a flock, right? That's what took down the plane that Sully Sullinger landed on the Hudson was a bird strike. The only time I've ever – actually, weirdly, the very first time I ever flew, I was 18 years old. I'd never gotten an airplane until I was 18 years old. And we were flying to New York. And New York City. It was like the senior trip to New York City. And so we flew – we were going straight, and all of a sudden we swung out sort of over Lake Erie, and I saw something fall into the lake. And the pilot said, "We've just dropped some fuel. Everything is fine." I was like, so I just assumed, well, that must be something that always happens. You must always fly over water and drop fuel. But no, it was apparently, some sort of malfunction. But thank God, no. Thank God, no. Although, what would your reaction be like if you knew the plane was going down? What would you do?
Ask for more peanuts. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I'd call my parents and tell them I love them.
Right. I would not be free. I'd be like, well, that's it, I guess. Not what I planned.
You would be freaking out.
No, I would not. I would not freak out. I would not freak out. I'm not freak out guy. Do you really think I seem like freak out guy when something crazy happens?
Do I really seem like freak out guy?
I'm not freak out guy. I'm telling you.
I swear.
All right. Thank you very much. Radio Tinder there. Coming up next for you, what Jeannie Buss has said about the Brooklyn Nets. That's coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.